This is Writer's Cast, a podcast about books and authors. I'm your host, David Wilk. Today I'm talking to Avery Ames, who's the author of a new novel. It's a mystery novel called The Long Quiche Goodbye. How are you, Avery?
I'm fine. How are you?
I should say that the subtitle of this is a cheese shop mystery, an easy string of words to say. And, you know, throughout, I think, you know, as the title kind of indicates, there's a, you know, there's a pretty good sense of humor in this book. And it's kind of lively and fun, I think. Considering that it's a murder mystery, you know, it's hard to say fun about murder, but it is a novel after all. So the story takes place in a small town in Ohio, which you've called Providence. Now, I know that you happen to live in California.
Correct.
How did you pick Ohio as the venue for this novel?
Well, it's an interesting story how I came about getting this series. I write mystery and I write thriller, and I had a number of books on my shelves, but they were not the ones being sold. I had an agent who said, "This is lovely, I love your writing, but I can't sell that one." And she finally came to me and she said, "Listen, Berkeley Prime Crime, which is a division of Penguin and Putnam, has a series that they want, and can you write about cheese?" And I said, "Yes, I can write about cheese." So I'm writing a work for hire, which means that they hire me to write something that they came up with. They came up with a cheese shop. They came up with the name of Charlotte. She's a cheesemonger in the cheese shop. She's our amateur sleuth. And they wanted it set in Providence, Ohio, which is a fictional, quaint town. I got to choose the county, so I chose Holmes County because friends of mine live in Holmes County. And I went out and I visited it, and I fell in love with Holmes County. So, you know, it's some place that I went and I did research, and I've been to cheese shop after cheese shop doing research, lucky me. And that's how I came to Providence, Ohio.
Well, and so, I mean, the setting is very clearly a kind of, you know, I compared it, in my mind anyway, to New Hope, Pennsylvania, you know, maybe Solvang, California, you know, these sort of small towns that have reinvented themselves as tourist destinations, or as maybe they're near a bigger city and they get people who are coming out from the city on the weekend to shop.
Exactly. This is a nice, quaint little town, St. Carmel, California. Actually, where I grew up, Menlo Park, it's not a tourist town per se. It's right near Stanford University, and it's a cute, small couple of streets town, lots of people know each other, you know all the shops. When a shop goes out of business, everybody mourns it. You know, it's a really lovely little area, and so that's what I built in Providence, is this little town that's built around the village green. It has a history. It's been there a number of years. It will have a founder celebration day, and you know, there are special little things, but everybody knows each other. They know the newcomers. They know who are tourists. They can tell. The Amish come to visit and sell their wares in town, but the Amish don't live in town. They live out on farms that are, you know, extended in a way, as well as other farmers, so it's not just an Amish territory. And it's small town USA.
Right, no, and I thought it you evoked that really well. And, of course,
okay.
Your main character, Charlotte, whose last name is Bessette, she's obviously of French extraction. Her father is grandfather is the founder of the store, and her grandmother runs it with him. And they're kind of really nice, you know, old kind of the old generation.
Salt of the earth people.
Yeah. And
yeah.
But they taught her, Charlotte, everything she knows about cheese, and she ends up running the store. And, of course, her brother comes in as well, and he's...
Her cousin Matthew.
Sorry,
right.
Cousin. I'm
cousin
sorry.
Cousin Matthew,
that.
And her cousin Matthew has a pair of twins, and they all move into her house because their mom sort of up and left them.
Right, and he's the kind of... he's the wine guy who...
Sommelier, right.
Right, who, you know, he kind of fits... I mean, I think, you know, these are sort of characters who you... I think you can recognize... you know, as people you might have run across, you know, who are starting a second life. And, you know, I think actually, socially, a lot of people today, may have lost their jobs or, you know, things that happen, and they've become by accident entrepreneurs in a new line of work. And sometimes, like the cousin, you know, they take an interest that they have and turn it into something that they can do for a living.
Well, exactly. I mean, Matthew was a sommelier at a very high-class restaurant in the Cleveland area, and when everything went awry, he decided he wanted a small-town atmosphere. He moved his girls back where they had family. He had his grandparents. He had Charlotte. And so immediately you're looking for that family core, and I think that's what is most important to me as I write, is to make sure that family is understood. And Charlotte has a very extended family. Her parents died when she was young. She was raised by her grandparents. She's got a cousin who is like her brother. She's got friends who are like her sisters because she's an only child. And it's that family quality that's very, very essential to me.
Right, and she's I think she's a really great character. She has a lot of energy, and, you know, she's a very, she's one of those people who does a lot of things. You run across people like that sometimes who just seem, you know, they can bake and they can cook and they can run a store and keep track of everybody's lives and solve problems. You know, they're sort of, you know, you can't understand where they come from. How do they get all that energy to do so much? And of course, you know, I don't want to give away too much of the story because it's a mystery. But clearly, you know, there isn't a mystery in the sense that the story, the mystery part of the story begins with a murder. But maybe you could talk a little bit about how you created that event.
Oh, okay. The event starts with, the book starts out with Charlotte taking over her grandparents' shop. And her grandfather wants to retire, though he doesn't want to truly retire, so he will be in and out of that shop a lot. Her grandmother actually is mayor of the town, and she runs the local theater, so she's quite an eclectic little gal. Anyway, Charlotte is taking over the shop, she and her cousin, and they are inheriting it. They're doing a big facelift to the shop. It needed new walls and paint and decor, and her grandfather puts up a fuss, but he knows that time marches on. So they're putting together a grand opening, and at the gala event, while all this wonderful stuff is going on, her grandmother has a fight with one of the local divas, and friends are saying that they're dating new people, you know, all the little gossip that's going around, and suddenly there's a scream, and there is a body found on the front steps of the, right outside on the sidewalk in front of the cheese shop, and her grandmother is found with a bloody knife in her hand. So, and that's all given away on the very back cover, so I didn't give you anything that wasn't there, I just didn't tell you who, why, and when. But it's a big event, and so in those first three chapters of the book, you'll get a full flavor of what the book is about, who these people are, who populates it, who might be a victim, who might be, you know, someone that is a killer. And so that's the basic story without giving too much away.
Right, but what becomes interesting is, you know, you've got all these characters in this town, including, you know, the chief of police, who is somebody that Charlotte knows very well.
Right.
And, of course, you know, he himself doubts that Charlotte's grandmother could possibly be the killer, but because there is circumstantial evidence and there is no one else, he has to make her the prime suspect. And they put her under house arrest, and you know, that's a kind of small town thing. They know she's not going to go anywhere. But what's interesting is that Charlotte kind of inadvertently becomes drawn in. Into becoming the sleuth, and of course she makes a lot of missteps throughout. You know,
she's not very good at it.
Right, but she believes constantly. I mean, I thought that was kind of interesting that she's this sort of naive throughout. You know, that she really believes in the circumstantial evidence that she sees, and partially she's aided and abetted here by the young woman who works for her in the store. You mentioned the Amish.
Rebecca, yes.
The girl who is herself an Amish child who has kind of left her home and come to work in the nearest town. She hasn't gone to a big city, but she's gone to a town, you know, and kind of exploring herself and trying to see who she is. But she obviously watches a lot of television.
Yeah, and internet and television.
Right, and
she might, you know, Hulu some things.
Right.
And still, she loves the internet. She loves to watch murder mysteries and NCIS and CIS and Law and Order and Murder, She Wrote.
Right, so, you know, the good news is, there, you know, she and Charlotte are kind of actively trying to figure out how to save grandmother.
Right.
But the bad news is they let all of that television stuff go to their heads, and they think they know more than they do.
Right. It's a little bit of Lucy and Ethel without going complete fool
right.
or comedy.
Right. But there is
yeah.
there is a certain element of, I mean, that's kind of what, you know, makes the novel, when I said fun earlier on, is that it's, you know, there's a certain amount of fun that you're obviously having with them. You know, their inability, they're kind of like Keystone Cops, you know, where, and there is a lot of complexity in the stories behind a lot of the people that they end up accusing.
Right.
You know, I don't want to give away too much, but they kind of go down this path of trying to figure things out, and getting, they get in the way a lot. They get the police chief mad at them a lot. You know, but throughout there's a certain amount of, I mean, there's a lot of kindness as well, because the police chief doesn't want the wrong person to be accused any more than they do.
Right. He's not a bumbling idiot. He's a very, very strong police chief, but he's he only has a detective. So it's a very small town. He doesn't have enough footwork himself to, you know, to be able to, excuse me, enough, you know, employees to do the footwork himself. He doesn't like Charlotte in there. He doesn't like Rebecca sticking her nose in and always coming up with ideas, and Rebecca always has ideas. And, but he's not stupid, and so he is doing his police work as well. He's not just settling on Grand Mare, but Charlotte just doesn't think he's moving fast enough, and she's got to protect the woman that raised her. And so that's where she comes in with that heart. I'm not giving up no matter what you do, and you can't tell me to stop.
Right. And, of course, she is much like her grandmother, who also is intrepid and unwilling to give in to convention and, you know, the common wisdom. So as she's the mayor, you know, the other subtext that's going on in the book is that she's being, she has to run again for mayor, and the person that she's running against, who ends up being the wife of the deceased, you know, that creates another interesting dynamic where, you know, grandmother is kind of trying to maintain her position in the town at this, and as well as her innocence, and not have the community turn against her.
Right.
So there's a lot going on. And, you know, again, we probably don't want to talk too much more about the plot, because then we start to give away stuff. But
right.
I think for readers, you know, it's kind of fast-paced, fun. And, you know, I think that, you know, when you read a mystery, I think, I don't know about other people, but I certainly am always trying to figure out, you know, who's doing what, and kind of looking at what the writer has done and trying to figure out whether I can, you know, guess ahead. And I like it when I don't. When
good.
I don't see who it was, it's not obvious, and, you know, I can't figure it out. And again, I'm not a real, you know, I'm not a real mystery person where I try to decode things, you know, and be smarter than the writer. It's just a kind of natural, I think, an impulse to try to figure out what's going on when you're reading a book that's got a solution to a problem.
I agree.
So, you know, as you wrote this book, when you said earlier it was for hire, this is a case where the publisher comes up with a concept.
Right.
The concept here is, I mean, the concept included the cheese shop and the idea of of Charlotte being the proprietor of the shop.
Right.
And did they say then, you know, she's going to inadvertently become involved in a mystery, a murder, and then she'll be the one who solves it? Or did you end up you know, adding to what they gave you?
Well, I added a lot to what they gave me. What they gave me was, excuse me, they gave me who died and why.
And that's
what they wanted for their first book. Now, I have two more books coming because the series, the Chief Shop Mystery Series, is at this point 3 books long, but it's selling well, so we're hoping it'll be longer than that. And they gave me Charlotte, her grandmother, her grandfather. They gave a couple more characters. They wanted her cousin in the shop as the sommelier. So they gave some basic, you know, broad strokes of what they wanted in the book. And they said who they wanted to die. And the truth is, I know other friends that have written work for hire, and they've even changed the entire story. But I liked the story, you know, the basis of what they gave me, which covered about, you know, 3 chapters, at which point it just took off on its own for me. And I created this outline that they all approved and said, wow, I just love that, write it. And so I finished the book in record time, which was great because I had a structure that I knew they wanted. They wanted Charlotte, our amateur sleuth, to be the amateur sleuth in every book. So she is the heroine. She is the one that will solve the crime. They will all be personal to her in some way. It's not going to be her grandmother always is the suspect. But for some reason, she has to get involved, and she doesn't think that the police are doing a fast enough job. Not that they aren't good enough, but they just aren't doing it fast enough. She does like results. So, and then she always has Rebecca sort of prodding her on the side, saying, faster, faster, do it, answer, answer. So, and that's Rebecca's character. She's supposed to be the one that's goading her along to, you know, keep searching, keep searching. And I think if you look in, you know, lots of different stories, you'll have Nero Wolfe, and he's got his sidekick who's, you know, Archie's out there trying to, you know, get all the answers, but you've got Nero in the background prodding him, saying, but that's not enough. What else do you have to look for?
Well, it's, I think the basis of this is Sherlock Holmes, and,
yeah,
you know, there's always...
And Watson, exactly.
Yeah, there's always the, you know, it's the, well, there are all, you know, many cases of the kind of a hero with a helper. And,
yeah,
you know, Batman and Robin. I mean, it's,
yeah,
it's sort of, you know, it gives, I think there's a certain, it's like a structure that people relate to. It's an archetype
right,
that people understand. And I think it's interesting to have a, you know, a woman who ends up inadvertently become, I mean, she's not really a detective, so she's...
No, she's not.
This is the in that genre of accidental... you know, murder mystery. She's not a police person, you know.
No, they call them amateur sleuths. Absolutely.
Right, right. And so, no, I think it's interesting that the publisher had this idea. Obviously, must have been based on, you know, their experience and their desire to satisfy readers. Yeah.
Well, Berkeley is very good at this. They look at niches in the market and they say, gee, what are readers saying that they want? There are mysteries about, you know, lots of mysteries about food. I write on a blog called Mystery Lover's Kitchen. And 6 of us authors, we all write essentially a culinary-style mystery. One writes about coffee, someone who runs a coffee house. Another writes one about barbecue. She runs a barbecue diner. And so there are foods involved because people like the fact that they can get into this warm, cozy feeling of learning something about food. In the Cheese Shop Mysteries, there's lots of tidbits about cheese, the history of cheese, the taste of cheese, using it in recipes. There are recipes at the end of the book. I actually had someone look at me last week, and she said, ooh, recipes, where are they? I said, end of the book, before the first chapter of the next book. She said, okay, I'll have to find them. And I thought, how cute. But there are people that like to have, you know, recipes. So Berkeley has figured out that there are people that like to read about food. They read about cookies and brownies and cupcakes and ice cream, and somehow they need that person to be involved. So most of these amateur sleuths have that as their profession. They might be a caterer. They might be a baker. In this case, they said cheese, and someone said to me, do you really think people are going to be interested in cheese? Well, I don't know about you, but every restaurant I go to now, they seem to have a cheese platter. And it's and if you go into any grocery store now, they seem to have boosted up their cheese shop. You can have tastings of cheese. People are interested in the fact that there's more than just cheddar, Swiss, and Monterey Jack. You know,
oh, yeah. No, I think that's right. Cheese has been a, you know, it's similar to wine and coffee,
yeah.
And this is, you know, we live in an era of great interest in the variety of foods. And I think that's a kind of outgrowth of the, you know, it's just a development of people's palates over time that you,
yes,
you know, and of course I know it's not universal, and there is a certain element of, you know, you have to be able to afford to eat those, nicer cheeses. So it may not affect everyone, but I think overall the society is much more attuned to variety and challenging their palates to try new things.
Right.
And clearly in a fromagerie, which is a French word for cheese shop, Charlotte has the opportunity to talk almost offhandedly, and that's, throughout the book, she's, letting loose with some information about how a particular cheese tastes or its consistency or what it pairs with. I think that enriches the story. If you're interested in people as characters, it makes them more real. These are the kind, this is a person who has a life that revolves around cheese, and that is part of what she talks about.
That's her passion, yes.
I think that made it fun. I mean, again, that's part of the fun quotient for me. The book is, I think you wrote it very well. The writing is good, but I think a lot of it is the kind of richness of detail and story that goes along, or elements that go along with the story.
Right.
So that made it a lot of fun, and I think... And I think that people, obviously from a commercial standpoint, it's great to get people interested in a character, because then, as you alluded to, you're writing another one, and there'll be another one, and you might, and the Nero Wolfs, and they went on and on and on.
Yeah.
Or the Sax Rohmers, all those great series of the past. Once you really like a character as a reader, you want to read more adventures.
More. Mm-hmm.
It's Tarzan. There, you could go on and on. There's new adventures for your main character to be had.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, it's a lot of fun. Now, you had mentioned also that you've written mysteries and thrillers before this that were not published. So this is your first published book?
This is my first published book. I had a television series on the air for a little bit, and I've written short stories, but this is my first published book, and I'm hoping that there will be others besides this series that, my publisher will say, oh, you're doing such a good job, let's also get you to do this, or this. And but I've got, like I said, I've got books sitting on my shelves, and I think they're all good. And, in fact, the writing of them was what got my agent interested in me, and my agent to say to the publisher, she writes a really good book, it's just the one they didn't think they could sell. And that is an indication of the market. The publishing industry is a very, very tough, tight market right now. They've got to make sure that what they publish, they can sell. And so if they aren't passionate about your book, no matter if you spent 3, 5, 10 years writing that book and it's good, if it's not something that they think they can sell, then they just aren't going to take it on. And I was talking with my editor, and she said, they go through a panel. So now they've got, let's say, 5 editors that have to sit in front of 5 marketing people. And the marketing people will say to those 5 editors who are passionate about that idea, I can sell that one, but not that one, not that one. Yes, that one, not that one. Now you've got 2 out of the 5 that just got a green light, even though you had a writer passionate, an agent passionate, an editor passionate, but you got to marketing and they said, nah, that doesn't really fit. So it's a very, very quirky business, and I'm thrilled to be here with something that they knew that they wanted, and I'm doing it well, I guess.
Well, I hope so, and I hope you do get the opportunity to... publish some of your others. I mean, clearly, once you have success and you have a name, then it becomes a lot easier to find readers for other books that you write. Of course,
yes.
What you have to watch out for is you don't want to get typecast in the role of writing an amateur sleuth series, and that would be the only thing that you're allowed to write. Obviously, that's the tension between that kind of success and your desire to express yourself in other forms.
Right, and yet, some people will say, but that is what I want to write, so I would be thrilled to have 3 or 4 of those, or 2 of those. So I'm open to whatever my publisher and I can work out. There's a thriller in me, and actually she's reading pages of a thriller of mine, but if it doesn't sell, it doesn't sell, and we'll, look at something else. I've got lots of years and lots of creative ideas.
No, I think it's really good. And tell me again the name of the next novel.
The next novel is called Lost and Fondue.
Right,
as in Lost and Found.
Good.
Lost and Fondue.
Very good title.
Yeah, thanks. And the first chapter is at the end of this book. So there's a teaser in this book. And there is a teaser. There's a chapter on my website of The Long Quiche Goodbye. So if people would like to read that first chapter of The Long Quiche Goodbye, they certainly may by going to my website, which is averyaames.com. And that's Ames with two A's.
A-V-E-R-Y-A-A-M-E-S.com.
Correct. Well, first in the alphabet.
Right. I know. I noticed that. It's sort of like AAA or something.
That's
you know?
Right. AAA. First in the alphabet.
Yeah, it's very good. Well, Avery, it's been a pleasure talking to you.
It's been a pleasure talking to you, too.
Thanks. This is David Wilk for Writer's Cast, and we've been talking to Avery Ames about her new novel, The Long Quiche Goodbye, A Cheese Shop Mystery. Thanks so much.